Is India really missing its coal target, or is it missing its renewable target? What is the real story? Is the Prime Minister Narendra Modi being too overambitious as he goes about setting the targets for India's energy producing space? Latest reports show that India is unlikely to meet its coal demand, as well as it's going to miss its renewable targets. What is the true story? Here is the detailed conversation I had with Vipul Tuli, Chairman, Sembcorp Industries Limited, for the latest episode of Energenomics. Welcome, Vipul. To begin with, my first question to you, is it coal versus renewable, or how best does it work out?
First of all, thanks for having me, Richa. I'd like to make a couple of points. I think first is that at some level, this is a good problem for us to have. India has managed to do some very remarkable things on renewables, whether in wind or in solar or on the grid, et cetera, et cetera. But we sort of have a good problem because demand is pacing even that. And so in that sense, it's a good thing that we are having to play catch up and having to, think about even further capacity addition. I think the second thing is, rather than look at it as one fuel versus another fuel, the thing to do is to look at it as what is going to meet India's massive baseload power needs, and then what's going to meet its intermediate and peak power needs. All the time while transitioning faster and faster towards a cleaner, less emissions type of energy mix. So the question to my mind is really, what is the ideal mix that gets us to where we want to get to long term, but also meets the needs in the near term? Now, it's quite clear that energy demand continues to grow the way it is and looks like it will, particularly as more and more manufacturing investments come in, more and more infrastructure projects start to get built. It's quite clear that baseload demand is going to be needed in some form or shape. So I think the government's already taken a view that through a whole bunch of planning processes that additional fossil fuel capacity is needed for that. The way I look at this is that this actually very significantly puts on us the onus of further accelerating the pace of renewables. Because we have to ask ourselves, if the overall demand is increasing and if baseload is increasing, then how do we make sure that there is even more renewables that come in to partly contribute to the baseload and then partly contribute to the intermediate and the peaking requirements? Now, that will require further enhancement of the grid. In fact, faster, shorter cycle grid capacity additions will need to be there, and the renewable purchase obligations on the other side, those need to be, further enforced and driven and made even tighter, because that really allows us to do the kind of additional wind and solar that's needed. Because at the end of the day, India does have a net zero target. India does have, other commitments that have been made even in a 2030.
Vipul, I just want to interject there and
Yes.
say that you are coming from a company which had a huge thermal project which you have implemented. You've gone into green. Now you're only focused into green, and slowly you're doing away with thermal. Now, my question to you comes from that perspective, that when we are talking, well, as you rightly said, it's not correct to compare X versus Y, but it is, what would be ideal for India. So my question to you is that it is clear we cannot do away from thermal because our demand is such, and renewable capacity addition will happen at a certain pace. So given this context and missing the target, are we missing a bush for a tree, or what exactly is the real situation from an industry perspective? We would like you to explain it to us.
Yeah. See, I think the energy mix that's being portrayed, I think that makes it quite clear that conventional power is not going away in a hurry. At the same time, emissions targets and the net zero targets are also very much there in front of us. So you've used the word missing the target a couple of times. I want to put that in context that, first of all, to me, it's not clear that the target will be missed. there is still a lot more to be done, a lot more that can be added, not just in the central bids, but also in the CNI, also in hydrogen and so on.
Right.
I think secondly, we have to take these targets also in context, that these targets were set at a time when we were, I think, hardly 100 gigawatts on renewables, right? And what this target has already achieved is to allow the whole industry, the policymakers, and the grid to actually operate at a much, much higher level of aspiration, a much more higher level of delivery. So today we are now thinking about how to deliver, maybe 50 gigawatts a year, maybe more. Whereas earlier we may have been thinking about how to deliver 2 gigawatts, 3 gigawatts, 5 gigawatts. So I think that I would like to look at the target in that context. But I think from an industry perspective, of course, there's going to be baseload necessary, and so some conventional energy is being conventional capacity is being added. By the way, even in the baseload, the question is, what does long-term the baseload transition to? Today, we have a resurgence of nuclear going on around the world, and no doubt India is also re-looking at seeing how much is the maximum that can be done in terms of the nuclear. Of course, the pace has been relatively slow, but that will also, without a doubt, sort of pick up. But besides that, so I would say, the way I'd put it is there are probably five or six things that are needed at this point from an industry perspective to make this transition happen. Okay. Number one, to balance the additional conventional energy that's going to be built, the pace of renewables needs to be increased. Okay. As you mentioned, renewables isn't getting added fast enough. And so we really need to continue to introspect that, is it the purchase obligations that aren't strict enough? Is it the grid that's not moving fast enough? What is it? And so to really make renewables go faster. Number two, I would say in renewables itself, so that we are not just dealing with intermittent or infirm renewables, we
Right.
do need to think about additional types of renewables. So, for instance, just to take one example, solar thermal. Moment you do solar along with some molten salt or along with some thermal storage together with that, you get solar with some storage added to it. That immediately changes the willingness of buyers to take renewables, and it immediately changes the firmness of
Right.
number three, I would say the pace at which green hydrogen is picking up is actually quite interesting. Up till 2023, most projects were at the planning stage in India, but also across the world. I think 2024 is turning out to be quite an interesting year for green hydrogen. And while it will be small to start with, there are a couple of interesting factors about green hydrogen. First, that India is very quickly emerging as one of the most, one of the fastest and most competitive destinations to produce green hydrogen and its derivatives. And the reason is because of being able to combine wind and solar, being able to, the fact that we already have the regulations enacted, we have our various schemes already on the ground, while many other countries are still in the process of firming. The other part about green hydrogen, of course, is that it's many of the projects that were being discussed last year are now moving into action now. Whether it's the Far East Asian demand, whether it's some of the others, all of these are moving, quite fast, and we should see a bunch of green hydrogen projects, come to finality this year. But And for each of those projects, there's a massive amount of renewables that comes to be able to supply those. And those then also go towards the overall 500 gigawatt. That's the third piece. I think the fourth is which is still picking up, but needs to be moved quite fast, is I think a storage in mission mode. So we've got quite a bit of interest going on in pumped storage hydro, but equally grid scale. Battery storage, equally solar thermal, I mentioned earlier. Equally, there are now, I mean, for instance, China is now building seven different gravity storage plants as we speak. And so getting storage, the faster we can get storage, the faster we'll be able to get renewables into a more sustainable baseload and a sustainable intermediate load. I think the fifth thing I would say is nuclear, which was mentioned earlier. Because at the end of the day, if we can't always be relying on coal.
There's a supplement question to what you were just saying, Vipul. Is we are talking about various resources of renewable, which is available.
Yes.
Clean coal. I want to understand. I mean, like, why aren't we not focusing or spending on clean coal? Coal, I mean, every resource has, you know, this net zero thing we'll debate later. I'm very cynical about it because no resource is net zero. Everyone produces some decimal point of, you know, so it's like nothing like a net zero thing, according to me. I could be wrong. But clean coal, so why are we not, when we have surplus coal, coal in abundance, I'm talking about the entire energy basket, and power is one segment of coal use. There are other categories also where coal can be used. So why are we not, as a country, as industry players, talking about clean coal?
Look, I think that's a very important point you raise. I do agree that cleaning up the emissions of our coal fleet in the country is should be a priority going forward. I think so far we've been quite focused as a country on just getting the basic capacity required to meet people's energy demand needs. I think going forward, particularly as the new capacities start to get added, we will need to think about, you know, additional measures, whether it's cleaner coal, whether it's carbon capture, et cetera, that is needed. But again, I come back to the point of not just thinking about it as one fuel. If you think about what is going to meet our baseload and intermediate load,
right,
it will eventually need to be a combination of coal, nuclear, hydro, and some renewables with storage. So getting all of those together really is the requirement. I think there's one more piece that's essential, which again can be quite crucial for us to solve this puzzle, this energy mix puzzle and intermittency puzzle, which is the cross-border grid integration.
Correct. Right.
I think it's quite remarkable what India and its neighboring countries have been able to do. If I look at, for instance, Bangladesh, but then extending that into all the way towards Southeast Asia on the east and all the way towards, the Middle East on the west, is quite important, because that automatically gives you another 2 to 3 hours of additional, basically solar capacity available to cross into these from one country to the other, right? Because of the way the sun moves. And so while that will not eliminate the need for storage, it will substantially cut the need for additional storage. It'll substantially cut the need for, it'll substantially cut the overall costs of the transition. And so I think we have to be able to look at it as a basket of all these 5-6 different solutions.
Right. So I have last two quick questions to you. I mean, one can't let you go without asking, being the number cruncher and the finance guy that you are, I have to ask you this. Financing of these projects is a big challenge, whether it's green projects or whatever. You are having funds coming in, banking system is also lending. But what I understood is lack of awareness on many of the solar or renewable projects is still putting constraints or restrictions on the financiers because of the return on investment thing, as we talk.
Yeah. No, let me share my view on this with you, Richa. I think on the conventional power side, there is, there are challenges on securing financing, as we ourselves saw a few years ago. But that is something that, as these projects move more and more towards, government ownership, and also sort of more underwriting of the risks by the government, that financing challenge will have to be solved. Other than on conventional energy, on the renewable side, there is really no shortage of funds available.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is not the shortage of funds. The challenge really is, how do we make sure that the risk premiums associated with investing in our country and in investing in our projects can be minimized? Because the more we can minimize those risk premiums, the cheaper power we get in the country.
Right.
Now, what causes those premiums?
Mm-hmm.
There are primarily two factors.
Mm-hmm.
One factor is the country risk premium,
right,
which, of course, as India's macro situation improves, that is something that will improve. Mm-hmm. It will take its own course.
Mm-hmm.
But the second piece is the actual project risk.
Right.
And this comes down to very project specific factors,
right,
such as, for instance, is the grid going to be available the day you put on your, you achieve COD?
Right.
Or is it going to be a slightly moving target which you have to keep adjusting?
Mm-hmm.
Is the land going to be available, or are you going to have to keep, fighting a battle for land at each stage? Is the resource going to be underwritten, which is the wind risk or the solar risk going to be underwritten, or is that going to be totally the risk on the project? So I'm just taking two, three sort of examples there. And while the industry has done massively good work in terms of scale, we are one of the most ruthlessly competitive in the world.
Right.
These two, three factors, for instance, today we are implementing projects in the Middle East, we are implementing projects in Southeast Asia as well. We are seeing, particularly in the Middle East, many of these risks are just taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately they translate into the tariffs that are therefore achievable.
So that's very well explained, Vipul. But then my last question, and this, you as the head of Sembcorp had personal experience with center versus state. The war, that's the beauty of India, we could say. The federal structure is such that you have this constant center versus state. And we know electricity, both have their own, thoughts about how they want to manage electricity. So in this whole energy mix gambit, and as we are moving forward, what are the challenges which still remain as far as our federal structure is concerned?
I think to give credit where credit is due, a very major chunk of the state-related issues have been put to bed because of the payment security issues or the payments coming in time.
Right.
That has been a very, very substantial portion of what has. In fact, I would not be exaggerating to say that the risk-reward level of the sector itself has gotten re-rated, right, because of payments coming in. So now we are not out there doing, basically becoming daily receivables collections agents. And I think everyone from the states to the center to the developers are all much more comfortable that at least that part we are not dealing with on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
I think the if I had to say where is the current priorities should be, they would fall into two main areas. One, I would say, is land and related project site related availability. And the second, I would say, is ensuring that the demand, especially for clean energy, continues to be robust, and that, whether it's basically the offtake is there. Now, whether that comes because of the renewable purchase obligations, or it comes because of other means, or it comes because of, let's say, private customers requiring it and they needing some support to be able to access the grid, I think it could be either way. But those would be the two areas, the demand offtake side and making sure that that the barriers to those are removed.
Right.
And the other is the land and availability for, especially in the renewable resource rich states. But make no mistake, I think the basic alignment that this transition has to happen, and we have to find a way to get reliable, cheap and cleaner energy. On this, I think that there is no difference between the center and the states. We must appreciate that at the state level, it is not easy at all to make this transition. The moment you get so much intermittency in the grid, the moment you have to try and therefore manage that intermittency, yet not pass on higher tariffs to the consumers, all of that needs to be managed in quite a very, very careful way. And that's the challenge.
So basically, we should not be pessimists anymore. We are moving on the right track.
I would say there's lots of challenges. This is perhaps the most tricky industrial challenge that humanity faces, this green energy transition. But I got to tell you, there were many things which even 2 years ago, as we went into COVID and all that, if you had asked me, you know, would the payments thing get resolved? Would grid availability rules get clearer? Would open access rules become clearer? These were all intractable issues in those days. Relative to that, we are in a much better space. We can now talk about much more forward-looking, much more growth-oriented, much more transition-related challenges today. So I think we are in a better place.
Thank you, Vipul, for sparing us this time.
Thank you very much for having me.